And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm John Wells. I'm here with Lynn Ware Peake. Our first guest this morning is Damian Patton. He's the founder and CEO of Banjo. Damian's vision was to create the world's first crystal ball, the ability to know what's happening live anywhere in the world. Using artificial intelligence, Banjo makes sense of the noise generated by billions of real-time public digital signals happening around the world every second. Banjo organizes these signals by time and location, giving their customers an unprecedented level of understanding about humanity and the world around us. Damian Patton, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here on a snowy Park City day.
We are delighted to have you here. Tell us about your company.
Yeah, so we're a company that's really focused on two main things. Number one is AI for good, so artificial intelligence for good. Keeping the ethics in AI and how we use artificial intelligence to enhance humanity. And the second mission, and I think it's the more important mission, is it's not a mission statement. We are truly focused on using technology for the purposes of saving human life or reducing human suffering. If it doesn't meet that goal of saving human life or reducing suffering, we won't allow our technology to be used for it.
Well, it's not a mission statement. It's actually a mission then. Okay, and how do you keep the technology out of the hands of Lex Luthor or of the people that want to monetize this type of thing?
Yeah, so first of all, we strip all personal identifiable information out of all the data that comes in. So we're taking in only public signals, so that which anybody at home could get access to. But then we're stripping out the personal identifiable information out of that. So it's not about us looking at people's information or personal information. It's about detecting an event that could help save a human life or reduce suffering. And so it's very much about keeping you or I out of the equation and very much focused on what is the event that's happening and how can we get aid to that person faster.
So let's dive into this a little bit deeper. And first of all, you know, recently we interviewed a reporter from Wired magazine who had done a cover story on the human common sense element of AI, and I like how you take it one step further into ethics and morality, and that seems where it's got to go to for us all to sort of survive this, right? A deeper dive would be, take the Las Vegas shooting, for example. You get the information, public information that any of us can get at home, you say. But how, in the event of, say, a mass shooting like that, how are you getting the information? Because you don't know where it's going to happen. You don't have cameras everywhere, or do you?
Yeah, so we don't. We personally, as a company, don't have cameras everywhere. But there are cameras everywhere that are public, right? You think of traffic cameras that you can go on as a citizen and look at the traffic camera. But you can't look at all traffic cameras at once. You can go on to things like social media, and it's when people want to share publicly, you could search by a keyword, and you could find, sitting here in this station right now, something that someone's sharing somewhere about the snow here in Park City. But again, you can't monitor that 24/7 yourself. So what our system's able to do is look at these thousands and thousands of public signals that are coming in from cameras or from other type of information like traffic. And it's able to look at it 24 hours a day, determining if something is actually happening in the moment it happens. And that's the biggest difference between Banjo and, say, any other tech that's out there, is that it's about live. It's about what's happening the second, not the fantasy of real time, that something that might have happened 10 minutes ago, 30 minutes ago. When it comes to saving a human life, seconds matter, truly seconds matter, right? And so you have to be in the moment of time. And that's where Banjo is a paradigm shift in how we use technology, because it truly can understand everything live. And when I say understand, it understands the event, right? What is happening and where it's happening, so that we can get people who could respond to that to help save our life or to prevent suffering. We can get them there much faster than they could today.
Mm-hmm. So you talk, in simple terms, then you've got some sort of trigger, maybe some algorithmic trigger that happens and alerts you so that you can capture the data, not in these billions of terabytes of data, but bringing it down to hone in on a single moment in time. And you talk about the difference between, you mentioned real time and then compressed time.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a term out there, real time, that you hear everywhere. And We all take for granted that real time must mean now, because as a human being, I would say it means right now. But in reality of technology, real time is, it's been distorted in the sense it's very much historical. It doesn't always mean live. In fact, it almost never means live. And the difference between live and real time is the difference between life and death. And so that's where we're compressing time as a company from this real time element to being able to understand and detect things truly live, so that those precious seconds or minutes that a loved one needs help, we can help those emergency responders or whoever else it might be get help to people much faster than is otherwise able to do today.
So, Damien, tell us about the child abduction exercise that you participated with.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for bringing that up. I didn't know you guys even knew about that. So here in the state of Utah, every couple of years they go through law enforcement goes through an exercise where they actually abduct a child. It's an actor child, and they have a perpetrator who's an actor as well. And they treat it as a real child abduction, and they spend time with all of these different agencies, state, local, and federal, trying to put together an investigation for the purposes of recovering the child. And this is to get federal grant money and other types. So they asked us to come in and participate, and they asked us to use our software. And hours later, many, many hours later, and all these people that had participated, so we're talking about hundreds of person, maybe thousands of person hours later, they looked upon a lead that that led them to the recovery of the child. Where our system, the moment the child was abducted, within seconds, had information to all those investigators. And in the aftermath of when they went back and reviewed this, the attorney general of the state and others looked at it and said, we would have recovered this child within minutes of the abduction, not many, many hours later. And that is the difference between a child being recovered alive and, unfortunately, the fact that many children, when they're abducted, are never recovered. And when they are, sometimes they're deceased. And so the major difference here with Banjo is that we will change forever how child abduction is viewed by federal, state, and local law enforcement. And actually, the recovery of a child will be exponential now, because we're able to understand all of the signals and information at the area of the abduction the moment it happens. And it's no longer a mystery. Where did that child go? Where did the abductor take that child? The information's already out there. It's just there's never been a technology to harness that in a responsible, ethical way that can help us as human beings react faster and smarter to any type of incident, including child abduction.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Damien Patton. He's the CEO and founder of a company, Banjo, who has a presence here in Park City. So one day you're looking at an orange and it has all these bumps on it. Why don't you finish that story?
Yeah, so people always ask me, like, why Banjo and how did you come up with this? It always sounds appropriate for this show, science fiction, and how could this possibly exist today? And if it does exist, how did one of the large companies not invent this? And it's just one of those things where, you know, you're looking at something as innate as an orange one day, and you're trying to understand how you could possibly understand, as Lynn was saying, the world of data coming in live. Like, there's so much information. How could you possibly dissect that live? And in looking at an orange with the little bumps on it, it just occurred to me, what if we divided the planet up into little bumps? The bumps the size of the studio, the size of your living room, the size of your office, very small. And there would be trillions of them that would cover this planet, but it would give us the fidelity of understanding what's happening at any location and what's normal. What does normal look like everywhere in the world? So that when an incident happens, like an active shooter or a child abduction or a fire, that our system would be able to understand that that's not normal, and then it's not normal now in the live moment.
So you establish a steady state for this living room size area, and all the stuff that happens, which is normal, does not trip the tripwire. But when something abnormal happens, the wire's tripped, and that's when you get involved.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great explanation of it. And then to take it one step further, people out there are probably saying, well, how do you keep all these false things from happening? Because as today, in our minds, we think about all the false positives, all the things that turn out not to be true. And that's the beauty of our patented system, is that it takes in so many inputs, and we call it multi-source validation, so many multiple signals at once, that any one signal, no matter how good it is not the truth. You need multiple signals to validate from sources that cannot be manipulated by one or the other. And so it's, if you think of like Einstein's problem of E equals MC squared, it's a time and space problem. And that's what this is. It's a time and space, space being location. At any given time, and we're talking the time is live right this second, in any given space at any location, now add just the context part. This is happening right now. And if you have multiple signals that tell you there's smoke, maybe it's a traffic camera, there's smoke. Maybe someone's reporting on a traffic app that there's a fire on the freeway. Maybe then a 911 call comes in. All of these are different types of signals of validation that cannot be manipulated by one or the other. And therefore, you have a high degree of confidence or a low degree of confidence if something is actually happening. So we can more wisely as human beings use artificial intelligence to use these resources in a way that we can expand ourselves. So it's not about like eliminating jobs. It's about helping the people that are already in those jobs today react much faster and use our resources much more wisely than we are able to.
So focusing on reducing human suffering and saving human life, what about something perhaps not as important but insidious and pervasive in our world, fake news?
Yeah, so I mean, the term fake news means a lot
to
a lot of different people, and it's very polarizing. You know, for us, we've helped the media for a long time get breaking stories, right? So when you talk about fake news, we're not usually talking about a life-saving event. We're not talking about the fake news of the fires that are ravaging California right now and how can we get those people aid right now. We're talking usually about politics or something related to politics. And quite honestly, that has nothing to do with our mission. Our mission truly is to save a human life or to reduce suffering. And so if we're talking about news, getting information to the news outlets for the purposes of saving a life, reporting a fire or an active shooting, or giving law enforcement understanding of a shooting that's happening at a mall like this past weekend here in the state of Utah, that's what's really critical and important. It's not about debunking the fantasies and the non-fantasies of politicians and what is deemed fake news out there. It's just not of interest to me at all, because at the end of the day, if we're truly going to help humanity and we want to put ethics in tech and keep ethics in tech, then we have to lead from the front. And leading from the front means that we have to focus on things that are going to make the biggest difference in our society. And the biggest difference, I can't think of a more noble thing and the bigger difference than saving your life.
Right. And yet, if you look at a situation like, let's take the fire near Chico, California last fall, and oftentimes a public information officer, it's not that they mean to twist the story, but there's a way that you want to present the news. And in fact, I would imagine with a lot of emergencies, the resources aren't sent because we're not really capturing the magnitude of the event as it's unfolding. And so I can see this is probably something that you deal with every day.
It is, and you captured it. What you just talked about right there, the reason the fires got so bad is because of real-time information. Real-time information is historical. It's like the telephone game. Remember that when we played that in school? I tell someone one thing, they tell another person, but at the time it's a third person, it's something completely different. We didn't mean for it to be, right? As human beings, we all interpret things differently. Someone listening to me right now would retell exactly what I'm saying on the radio, would retell it just a little differently. By the time it gets to the third person, you know, maybe I'm manufacturing cars. And they didn't mean to do that. It's just what happens. And so compressing time and getting live information that does have the magnitude, we call it the severity of what an incident is from these multiple inputs, will allow a public information officer to be able to get information that's closer to moment zero than they're able to today, which is going to exponentially change the response that's given. And so it's not that they didn't respond to the California wildfires. They most certainly did. It just could have been responded to much faster. And if it was responded to faster, the fire would have never grown to the size that it did. And that's what we're really talking about here.
Lynn, you had mentioned earlier, you were talking about the shooting in Las Vegas on the concertgoers. Damien, I believe you all broke that story.
Yeah, I mean, we most certainly did. And, you know, such a tragedy down there. And the real tragedy is the lack of live information that groups at the hospitals even had. So we think today about, okay, it's a law enforcement response to the shooting and how that could have been better. And there's been a lot of reports about how law enforcement could have been better. And we did have that information and detected that and validated it before the 911 call was even made. And so that's the biggest difference here.
But what tripped the tripwire?
Multiple signals tripped the tripwire. Public cameras, social media, public social media. People that weren't even at the event or involved, but were way in the distance in the background that were just capturing that information inadvertently, tripped our tripwire.
But and you your think AI system continues to learn and is self-learning, and it's looking for these types of pictures or these types of words that are texted or whatever.
It's beyond that. It's almost human understanding. If we were just looking out the window right now and you saw smoke, you would understand that was smoke coming out of a chimney of a restaurant, or that smoke looks more suspicious, like it could be a fire that we need to attend to. Our system is that smart now and can look at a situation and say, is this maybe a gunshot, or is this maybe a mass shooting because it's affecting a larger group of people and it looks real because we have these multiple signals. But Banjo goes beyond just helping the public sector and emergency responders. You think about the hospitals that had to take in the hundreds and hundreds of people that were injured. And there's this golden hour of life that you need to get aid immediately. But these hospitals, we think in our minds as human beings, well, they must know right away as well, but they don't. They found out about the incident when people started showing up at the door, and then they paged doctors. And then it takes such a long time for doctors to get in. This is why this has to be disrupted, where hospitals know about these incidents immediately, so the doctors are paged immediately. So by the time you show up and you need care in an operating room, that operating room's already waiting for you. That doesn't exist today. It exists in the movies. It doesn't exist in real life. And that's what Banjo will change.
With a five-minute notice, advance notice, I'm just picking 5 minutes arbitrarily, they could dispatch 30 or 40 ambulances to the scene. They could. There's a lot of things that could happen with advance notice. Start setting triage up.
Exactly. I mean, just getting the blood from the blood banks to the hospitals to prepare. There's so much that we could do as a society to better prepare for when we are injured as human beings and then how to save our lives. And that's really what Banjo is meant to do and is doing, is closing that gap.
How do you distribute the information that you have gathered?
Yeah, very simply, because again, as human beings, the last thing you need in a crisis situation is a lot more information. It just more information creates the opportunity for things to become distorted or for critical information not to get passed on. And so what we do is we take the most critical elements of the event and we pass that along to, well, it depends on who we're talking about. But in the case of a child abduction, it would be the emergency responders like the police. Maybe it might be the Child Abduction Response Task Force from the Attorney General. It could be the Federal Bureau of Investigations Child Abduction Team, the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children, NCMEC, and sending them that signal in that moment in time so that they can better coordinate. And instead of misinformation happening or the hours it takes to collect information, we've already disseminated the most important things that they need to know for the recovery of that child to get them home safely.
So we've talked a lot about the public safety realm. Who are your other customers? Big companies? Are there small applications for what you're doing?
Yeah, so we power a lot of the media in the United States. Media, when I say media, I mean like our local stations here, KUTV, Channel 2, CBS in Salt Lake City. Their breaking news is powered by us, as are many local stations across this country, as well as the national news networks when it comes to breaking news. So we can help get information to citizens faster. And in fact, today, we as citizens get information to breaking news like a shooting or a fire faster because of what Banjo does behind the scenes. And we just don't know Banjo's doing that. But our focus is again, to our mission of saving human life. And media does help us get that message out. But beyond emergency responders, as you asked, in the public sector, it's about working with groups like hospitals. And a lot of times I think people think hospitals are government. Well, there are government hospitals, but many hospitals are private. And so that is working with large corporations, large health corporations, to make sure that they're tied in with the public safety, tied in with the media. So everybody now is getting information at the same time, much faster. So it's a coordinated effort. We've never seen that happen before. That's why it's a paradigm shift. If you think about it, we as human beings, we just take things for granted. We take like the invention of the mobile phone for granted now. We all have one. Banjo's that type of paradigm shift where we just take for granted as human beings that things are happening around us, but they're not as coordinated as we would really hope they would be. And so Banjo's going to change that.
The Google Hackathon is legendary for the top nerds in the world getting together trying to hack into something. I don't really understand what it is, but somebody told me you won two of them. Can you tell us what this hackathon is and how you did it?
Yeah, so, you know, and I'll give a quick shout out to my wife who's at home recovering from hip surgery or hip replacement surgery. But she convinced me and volunteered me to go and participate in Google's annual hackathon back in 2010. And, you know, they give you a hard problem to solve and they ask you to use certain technologies. And then it's judged by executives from Google as well as maybe venture capitalists from Silicon Valley. And I won that. And I had won a previous Hackfest right before that around the first mobile Hackfest when iPhone came out. And, you know, how do you do it? I think it's just, how do you win? It's just like people ask all the time, like, how did Banjo come to be? I use my life experience. I'm sure just as you've been successful in your life, using your life experience. We all have very different life experiences. But it's also what creates innovation is because I'm able to draw on all these different variations that I've had that are quite different from most people. But that difference has created a solution where I can see things just differently. It doesn't mean I'm smarter or better than anybody else. It's just I've had a different group of life experiences that let me see things much clearer than another person would see.
One of your other life experiences was being a top mechanic on a pit crew. How does a pit crew in NASCAR inform you and help you for what you're doing today?
I mean, my years as a chief mechanic on the NASCAR team were so formative in the fact that if you ever watch auto racing and you see how fast they work on a pit stop, in seconds they change the tires, they fill up the car, they make adjustments. And it's the difference between them winning or losing is hundreds or thousands of a second. And that can be won or lost with the teamwork that you're doing in the pits. And so it's about organizing. Think about this. A car coming in from a racetrack could be akin to a disaster happening. And then you have seconds, less than seconds, you have like milliseconds to think about all the different things that car needs, the differences of winning or losing. Just like when an emergency situation happens now, we don't have minutes or hours to debate things. We have microseconds to come up with a solution. That's the difference between life or death. And so that's how I equate what I learned in NASCAR to what I do today. I've been able to compress everything we do into that small amount of time that we have to make that critical decision. And you can't just make that critical decision in a vacuum. In NASCAR, we trained all the time for the unknown, all the different things that could possibly happen during that race. What would we do so that it would become second nature? And so that's how I'm training our system today, is so that everything becomes second nature for it, and it's training for everything all the time.
We're running out of time here, but I have to ask you, I know part of the reason, and it has to do with your love of the outdoors, I believe, but why Park City? You have dozens of employees here. How does it work for you? And, you know, does it have something to do with the talent pool from the Valley?
Utah is an amazing place, and I didn't know that before I moved here. And again, I'll thank my lovely wife at home, because she's the one who came to me when we were splitting our time between our office in Silicon Valley and in Las Vegas. And my wife came to me one day and says, we're moving. I want to go to Park City. And I said, Utah? I don't think so. And, you know, it's a beautiful place. My brother's named after the state. My brother's name is Zion. And so we have a lot of affinity for the beauty of the state. But we didn't know much about it. But being here the last year and a half, I can tell you the community within the entire state, not just Park City, the entire state, is something that I've never experienced. And it truly is a place where innovation of all types, not just tech innovation, but innovation of all types, is fostered at a different level than anywhere I've ever seen from a community aspect, meaning the people who aren't directly involved on the entrepreneurial level of what you're doing. And, you know, for us, yeah, the love of outdoors. I mean, I'm looking right now at the ski slopes here in Park City. I mean, what an amazing place. to be able to look out your window every day and see. But it's much more beyond that. It comes to the human element that's here of community. It comes to the talent pool that is here. But it even goes beyond that. And there's just something special about this place. And more people, when they come here, they always ask me, why are you in Utah and why not in Silicon Valley? We still have our offices in Silicon Valley. But they come here to Utah, and it doesn't take them very long to realize the magic of this place that goes beyond the ski slopes and goes to the human element. And I think this is the perfect place for a disruptive and positive technology like Banjo to be born from for the rest of the world to find out about.
It takes about 10 seconds after Googling Damian Patton to know that there's quite a lore around you. And one of those things is your involvement in the Baja 100, your love for the outdoors and some crazy activities.
Yeah, I mean, I when you work as hard as I do, and I know a lot of us work very hard, but we have very little time for ourselves personally. So when we do, I kind of, the extreme that I'm at work, I like to do that extreme outside of work. And one of those things would be off-road racing. And I could never ascend to that level because I never either had the resources to do it or just didn't have the time. But in the last few years, I've made the time for off-road racing. And I absolutely love it. The adrenaline of it, it's very different than what we do at work. But it's also very much in the same. I'm having to make split-seconds decisions behind that wheel to keep myself safe and my co-driver safe. And it's the same, it all feeds back into the same type of effort that we're putting into the company. But, whether it's skiing or whether it's dirt bike or whether it's racing off-road, I enjoy not only the outdoors, but I enjoy the extreme of what the outdoors can offer. And, we're only limited by our own limits of what we want to do and how far we want to press it. And, I'm still lucky that I'm able to keep pressing it quite a bit, and I'm hoping that I'm able to do that for quite a while longer. I always worry about, we're getting older, and so does that mean we're going to start taking our foot off the gas pedal a little? And so I'm keeping myself focused on keeping the gas pedal to the floor as long as possible.
Damian Patton is the founder and the CEO of Banjo. Get used to these two names, Damian Patton and Banjo. We'll be hearing a lot more about Damian and his company. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on Cool Science Radio.
Thanks for having me. It's been great to be
here. Thanks, Damian.